Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is John Russell. Before I bring him on, I want to remind you that you can always get new regular episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and of course, all podcast platforms. Check us out on Rockfin. It's where you get all our premium content, all of our regular shows, and all of the amazing premium content from all the content creators that are on Rockfin. Also, we have an amazing merch store up, t-shirts, stickers, bags, all kinds of cool stuff. That link is in the description or fknstore.net. We also have a really cool new affiliate that you need to check out, especially if you want to see what goes on in our sky at night. Hoffman Optics at UFONightVisionGoggles.com. Check these guys out. They have military-grade Gen 3 and beyond night vision goggles and UFO night vision tours available. You can see everything with these awesome goggles. Just be sure to put Forbidden One as any promo code in the order notes when you check them out. And finally, check out the great products at Ascent Nutrition. They're an amazing all-natural health and nutrition company, and not only do they have supplement categories like vitality and energy, healthy metabolism, and detoxification, you can see brain focus, intuition, and consciousness. I've been taking their nootropic focus, their liver detoxification, and my focus and attention is off the charts. If you're ready to optimize your meat suit, check out Ascent Nutrition. Tonight I want to welcome to the show John Russell. He has been an internationally known professional psychic for almost half a century, working with clients around the world. He's been a featured guest on many popular radio shows and recently filmed a TV pilot for the History Channel in which he physically explored the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. John, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Chris. I appreciate being here. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, of course. It's great to have you on. You have a fascinating background. You've investigated some seriously interesting places from history. Yes. Really looking forward to having a conversation with you. Now, you've had these, I guess you could say, enhanced abilities since you were a very young age, right? When did you realize this?
When I was 5 years old, I was sound asleep. And my parents had put a nightlight in the hall, so in case I had to get up at night, I could see in the dark. And so I was sound asleep and all of a sudden became wide awake. I mean, totally, completely wide awake, no grogginess, no drowsiness, nothing. And I thought, well, this is really strange. This is really odd. And I laid there a little bit and didn't have any urge to go back to sleep or anything. I raised up on my elbows in the bed to kind of look around the room. And I looked down the hallway, and in the nightlight's glow, there was this elderly black gentleman walking around the corner of the doorframe in the hallway. And I screamed bloody murder because my family's white. We didn't have anyone black living with us. And it wasn't that I was afraid of him because he was black, but my assumption was some intruder had entered the home, some unknown person that I didn't know. So as I screamed, he walked all the way around the doorway into the hall and down toward my bedroom, keeping his eyes locked with mine. He never looked away. Now, his look was not malevolent. It wasn't menacing, but he kept a steady gaze on me. And I can describe him to you. He had close-cropped white hair. He had a white mustache. He had a red plaid shirt, khaki pants, black shoes, and a black belt. And he was every bit as solid as you or I. He was not a phantom. He was not misty. He was not wispy. He was every bit as solid as you or I. And I screamed again, and my parents started to come running. And at that, he began then to get translucent, then transparent, then finally to vanish completely. And when he did, I realized I had seen my first ghost eventually after that. So he came for one purpose and one reason only. And I learned that, I surmised that a short time afterward. And that was, he came to open up the portal to over 1,000 so far physical paranormal manifestations that I've experienced. And when I say physical, I mean, we've photographed them, we've audio recorded them, we've video recorded them, other people have witnessed them. They actually happen on the physical plane. And there's been over 1,000 of those occurrences. And the second thing that he opened up was, or activated, was my psychic gift. And the way that I discovered that had happened, I was out in the backyard playing. This was a short period of time afterward. And I was out in the backyard with a toy, and this car pulled in the driveway that I didn't recognize. So I ran in the house to get my parents, and I said, some car is pulling the driveway. I don't recognize the car, and I don't know who the people are. And they said, okay, we'll be right out. So they came out, and they said, oh, those are friends of ours. They're just coming to visit. And so they got out and walked toward my mom and dad, and we were all standing outside before they went inside to visit. And I was standing around kind of eavesdropping, playing with a toy. And all of a sudden, I looked up at them and I interrupted the conversation and I said, you folks have just been on vacation. And I said, you took that car that's sitting in the driveway. That's the car you drove. And I said, you have two kids. You don't have them with you today, but you have two kids and you took them with you in the car on vacation. And you stayed at this hotel that looked like this and had this many stories, and it had these trees out front that looked like this, kind of in a row. And then I described the pool area to them. Well, the guy, the husband, he kind of looked at my mom and dad with this kind of cockeyed grin on his face, like, what's going on? And the woman, I will never, as long as I live, Chris, I'll never forget the expression on her face. Her jaw was agape. Her mouth was agape. Her eyes bugged out more and more and more. And she looked at my parents and she said, how the hell could he possibly know this? And my parents kind of looked at each other and they said, well, what do you mean? And she goes, how the hell is it possible that he can know these things? And my mother made some comment like, oh, you know, kids and their imaginations. And she goes, no. She said, we just went on vacation in our car with our two kids. And the hotel we stayed at is exactly as John described. And that's what we were coming over to tell you, was about the vacation we just took. How the hell could he possibly know this? And she was staring at me like I had cobras growing out of my nose. And my dad was, hush, John. And my mother was, go play, John. And I was like, yes, nice to meet you folks. And I took off. And they looked at me like I was some kind of little impish creature or something from the unknown. And I guess it rattled them pretty much, because I never came back to visit my parents again. Oh. But that's how I discovered that I was psychic, that I could see things about people. Then I learned that I could accurately predict their futures. I could accurately have insights into their lives, their emotions, and their past history. And all of that came about because of that awakening.
Now, you said that this spirit that came to you when you were five was right. Basically the cause of all this awakening. And
right.
And do you know why? Did he ever kind of further explain any of this to you? Did you have any other instances of contact with this being?
To my knowledge, I never have, and I've sent thoughts out to him, and I have to say, that was the only incident in my life that I've ever been afraid. Of all the experiences I've had since, I've never been scared. But periodically, I would kind of send thoughts out to this guy and say, I don't know if you're still there. I don't know if you're watching out for me. I don't know if you know, mission completed, but thank you for coming and opening up that portal of these experiences, because I've been incredible. They've been fantastic. And then thank you for opening up my gift, because that gift has enabled me to help people around the world. I've read for clients in over 40 countries now. And it's enabled me to help a lot of people to benefit their lives and to help them move forward in positive ways, to understand their lives and their spirituality better. So it's been a blessing. So I hope he knows out there that that I think of him fondly, and that, you know, I give him those thanks.
What are some of the abilities that you're now able to access, you know, besides seeing spirits and maybe predicting future events?
Right. There's not much that I can't do. And I attributed that not only to my natural gift, but as I was growing up, I studied everything that I could find on religion, psychology, parapsychology, spirituality, psychic, the paranormal, the supernatural. And I studied how to use a Ouija board, how to read tarot cards, how to use a crystal ball, how to have a seance, psychometry, telekinesis, and became fairly proficient at most of those things. So it was a matter of activating a natural gift and then taking that gift and working with it as much as I could to make it as accurate as it could be and as good as it could be, so I could help as many people as possible. And there's not a heck of a lot that I don't know something about, haven't tried, haven't done, haven't experienced it. So it covers a wide range of things.
Now, would you say that anyone has the ability to tap into some of these hidden abilities that, I mean, I believe that all humans have them. It's just an ability of accessing them, right?
Well, it not only is it an ability to access them, to understand how to do that, it's an understanding that we all have a degree of gifts.
Right.
Just like you and I might be the same age, the same rough physical condition, and the same general health, but you'll beat me every single time in a foot race, whether it's a 100-yard dash or a half-mile run or a mile run or whatever. We can be the same background, same genetic makeup, the same health, same age, but you're going to beat me every time in a foot race. And no matter how hard I train, you're still going to beat me. So it's kind of like the same thing with psychic gifts and psychic abilities. Yes, we all have them to a degree. And some people are never going to get past the point of, oh, I bet you that's Aunt Mildred calling on the phone. And they take their cell phone out of the purse. Sure enough, it's Aunt Mildred. But that's about as far as I get with it. And not everybody's going to become a professional psychic. Not everybody's going to have these deep insights and deep experiences. And even for those that do, we all find a plateau. There comes a time when, okay, this is kind of the maximum effect of my gift and what I can do.
Do you think that if people, I guess, are more open to experiencing these things, do you think that it's because that they were born that way, that they're born more open to seeing spirits? Because I know that a lot of younger children have access to some of this stuff. And then when they get older, it kind of goes away, right?
Yeah. You know, I think we're born with that kind of innate ability to whatever degree it is for us. But the problem is, exactly as you've stated, that as we age, we tend to lose that. And the reason for that, Chris, is that our parents, you don't have an invisible friend. Stop that nonsense. You know, no, you did not see your dead grandfather sitting on the bed. Those things don't exist. And those things don't happen. And then the church gets into it. And, you know, well, that's demonic. Don't fool with that. So little by little, the processes get shut down and we're made fun of and we're censored. And then you get into adulthood and people, oh, you don't believe in that nonsense, do you? And so you just gradually more and more withdraw, more and more build the walls up and gradually lose contact with that gift. And for some people, it's a little easier to retain it. For some people, they have to work really, really hard to try and get it back.
That's very interesting. Now, I understand you had experience with guardian angels, and they've helped you with they've actually helped you with some serious health issues. Could you tell us about that?
Well, not my health issues so much, other than keeping me alive through several very serious health issues. But I've had three incredibly dramatic examples, and we'll delve into them. I'll tell you a shorter one first, and if we have time, we can go into the others. They're all very dramatic, but the very first one that occurred to me that I was really aware of in a melodramatic way, you know, some of the thought processes in the spiritual community is that guardian angels only influence us or guide our intuition or give us signs or whatever, but they don't actually physically do anything.
Well, now, as a little introduction to guardian angels for people that may not be familiar, these beings are something that's always with us since our existence, right?
Right, right. And so a lot of people think that guardian angels don't actually physically influence the physical realm, our world, but they do. And I can tell you that in the example I'm going to give you is a good example of that. Our neighbors, I had moved back home when I was in my, I guess, late teens, mid to late teens, somewhere around in there. I had been living on my own and I moved back home, and our neighbors that I had known ever since I was a kid, he developed dementia, and it was really sad to watch him go downhill, because this had been a man that he played chess, he built things, he was really intelligent, and then to watch him decline like that was really horrifying. And when he got deeper into the throes of the dementia as he aged, and he was already pretty elderly, he became violent and he would have hallucinations and swing at him with his cane. Maybe he wasn't having hallucinations. Maybe the veil had broken down and he was seeing the other side. We don't know, but he would also try and attack his wife. And I was one of the few people that I could come over, I could calm him down. He wouldn't come after me. He would relax when he was around me. And she would get me to come over and shave him, for example, and do things like that. So I have to preface this by saying I've had several chronic health issues ever since I was a small child. And I've always pushed myself. So when I had a good period of time, I played tennis, I practiced several martial arts, I lifted weights, I ran, I did all these things. So, and then in bad times, I was down and good, you know, some days good to get out of bed type thing. So anyways, I was in that state of fitness and she had asked me to come over and change some curtains out for her in the living room. And to do that, to reach them, it necessitated standing on a small stepladder, about 3 or 4 steps tall. And I would have to stand on the very top step to reach it and to change the curtains out. And I said, sure, I'll be happy to do it. So I went over and she said, well, let me get him settled in the den, which was on the other side of the house. And she came in and showed me what needed to be done. I said, okay. I said, well, go tend to him. I can handle it by myself. No problem. So now there's a specific reason for me mentioning the martial arts. I get up on the ladder and I'm doing this chore. And I'm kind of glancing around the room as I do so, looking at what I need and so on. So nobody's around. And I'm very uncharacteristic of me. I begin to lose my balance and I start to fall off the stepladder and I'm falling back and to my left. And it's going to take me a lot longer to tell you this than what actually happened. But with my martial arts training, I did judo. I did several types of physical contact, martial arts, taekwondo, shotokan, other things, kung fu. And I knew through the tumbling I had done, the flying kicks, spinning kicks, all those things, that it would be real easy for me to control my body as I started to fall by simply torquing back this way a little bit and then spinning back around after to create the torque. And I would spin in the air and catch myself. As I fell, I'd either fall on my hands and knees or fall on my hands and kind of in a crouch position and catch myself. And it was perfectly workable and I knew I could do it. And I knew I wasn't coming to any harm falling. So I wasn't afraid of the fall. And as I torqued back this way to get ready to rebound, this large, firm hand, physical hand, pushed itself up onto my hip and my lower back and stopped my fall and pushed me back up on top of the stepladder. And it held there until I got steadied. And the second that the hand went away, I turned my head and I said, oh, thank. And there was nobody there. And I was like, wow. Now, where I was in the room, it was a good 30 feet to the hallway and onto the other rooms of the house. So if anybody had been there, the hand is on me and I'm turning a split second later to look, nobody's there. Nobody, the flash couldn't have gotten out of the room that fast, right? Nevertheless, even though I had this plethora of paranormal experiences, I was like, wow. And I snuck through the house real quiet, ran through the house, looked, they're there in the den. He's watching TV. She was reading a book or knitting or doing something. And I was like, wow. So I went back, finished the chore, periodically looked around to see if I would see whoever it was, the angel, the person that had saved me, and didn't. But I told them many times, thank you. Because, you know, they literally saved me from that fall. And I mean, it was absolutely a physical presence of that hand. And not only did it stop my fall, it steadied me, pushed me back up and held me till I regained my balance. And so guardian angels absolutely do physically intervene.
Yeah, I've had a couple of strange experiences in my life where I probably should have died. And something intervened at the very last second. And it's like, what happened there? How did that happen? You know,
exactly.
So do you think that could possibly be guardian angels?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And people say, well, I was in a wreck. Where was my guardian angel or, you know, whatever. Well, in the first place, we have to listen. We don't listen. We're distracted. We always have the earbuds in. We're scrolling on the cell phone. We got the music going. We're chatterboxing. We're doing something. So we don't get quiet and listen and pay attention. And we have to listen to hear the voices of the guardian angels. And then when we hear those voices, we have to act on what they tell us. And Chris, if you'll think about news stories that we've read where very rarely a victim of a serial killer escapes, a lot of times they'll say, you know, I had the urge not to drive down that street, or I felt like I shouldn't go in that store, or I felt like I shouldn't be in that neighborhood.
One shouldn't take that flight or something like that.
Yeah, but they went against it. And then, you know, boom, that's what happens. So we have to listen. And then once we listen, we have to obey.
Wow, that is that's interesting. And, you know, like I said, I've had a couple of experiences that I can't explain that I probably should have died from. So
Exactly. And
go ahead.
They save you. They kept you going. Yeah.
Now
and
you're
here for a purpose. You're acting out that purpose now in life.
Yeah, that's what I was just kind of thinking, that if you have this purpose and you're not, something's going to happen to where you won't be able to fulfill it, they may want to step in and help you out a little bit.
Right.
That's cool. Now, you've experienced also bizarre doppelgangers, continued ghost activity, strange nature and spirits, things that bring you gifts. Could you tell us about like some of those strange experiences?
Oh, man. Well, the doppelgangers, let me tell you the most weird doppelganger experience I had. And I've seen several doppelgangers. And most of the doppelgangers I've seen, the person was alive and well and in some vicinity I could verify at the time that I saw their double. So it wasn't somebody that just looked like them. And the reason that I know that, this, I was dating this woman that was very pretty. Don't look at me and don't ask how, but she was really a knockout and very, very flashy and very distinctive in appearance. And she drove a distinctive car with some distinctive decorations in that car, specifically on the rear deck of the car. So one morning early, I was driving down the street and coming the other way in the lane next to me, going the other way, was her car. And as it got closer, I looked, and sure enough, it was her, and it was her car, and no question it was her, because like I say, she was gorgeous, she was flashy, she was just, was really unique, and there was the decoration in the car that was unique to her. And my first thought was, what in the world is she doing out so early in the morning, because she usually wasn't out and about that early. And I said, well, okay, whatever. So as she got nearer, beyond any shadow of a doubt, it was her. And I honked and I waved and she didn't respond. I honked and I waved again. And as she got closer, she had like this death grip on the wheel and she was staring straight ahead with the weirdest, strangest look on her face of any person I had ever seen. And I honked and waved again and she never looked over and she drove right on by me. So I thought, well, what in the world? Why wouldn't she look over and acknowledge me? And so I thought, well, I'll call her home phone and leave a message on her machine and bust her chops a little bit. So as I'm watching her car go away in the rearview mirror, I dial her home phone and in a couple of rings, she picks up. And I said, what are you doing home? She said, well, idiot, where else would I be? I live here. And I was like, no, you don't understand. And then I had to tell her, I just saw you, your car go by me just now. And so I said, okay, we'll have to discuss this later because we were both busy and we tried to assign some meaning to it and weren't really sure that we ever could, but which brings up a point that we get some experiences and we don't get to assign meaning to those experiences. We don't find out the fine details of who, what, where, why, when, and how. And some of the things that I think happen are just to kind of jar us awake and keep us in sync with things. And some of the things I think we experience is the other side just sending text messages, if you will.
Or glitching the matrix or something.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're here. We just want you to know we're around, you know, just saying hi, that type of thing. And then, of course, then you have the interventions that are literally life-saving, which I've also had. So those types of things.
Nature spirits you've experienced?
Oh, yeah, a lot of nature spirits. And one of the strangest experiences that I had, and I write about this in my first book, Riding with Ghost Angels and the Spirits of the Dead. I'm a biker. I've been a biker since I was 15. And a lot of miles on my current bike. I've got almost 114,000 miles. So I ride a lot. And I had scheduled a day off, and I was going to all of the state parks here. And then hiking several miles and then hopping back on the bike and riding to the next state park, get in 200 or 300 miles during the day and visit 2 or 3 state parks, hike maybe 15, 20 miles. So I stopped at this first park. And I have to mention, since moving to Florida, Florida is the windiest darn state on the planet. You can be blue skies, sunshine, no storms within hundreds of miles. And the wind will try.
I spent 10 years in Florida. I'm familiar.
You know. And the wind will try and rip you off the bike. It's like, what is up with this? So very rare wind-free days here. And that day, as I had left out, the first thing I noticed was that there was no wind, that it was absolutely still. So, I have to preface this actually by saying that there was a book that I had read about a noted crop circle researcher. And he had stated that if these crop circles were made by intelligences, then we ought to be able to communicate with those intelligences. And he had made the request that a certain pattern appear in a certain patch of grass that he could see outside his office window, and it did. And I thought, well, that's real interesting. I'm going to try that. So I did before I left out that morning and went on my ride, stopped at the first state park, got off the bike, and started walking down the path. And from a good ways away, I could see this small saw palmetto, which is a type of palm. And it was real young, so it was about 2 or 3 feet high. And the weird thing about it was, as I was walking toward it, it was on an arc going back and forth like this, and about that fast. And the arc was about 2 or 3 feet wide. So I'm like, what in the world is this? And I look around the forest and I said, well, it must be the wind. And there is not a leaf stirring anywhere in the forest. And I thought, okay, this is pretty weird. So as I get closer, I look at this thing and it's going like crazy. And the arc is perfectly straight. It's not wavering as it goes. It's going straight back and forth in a perfect straight arc. And as I get closer, I can hear it. And the stem is bending and going tick, 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 just like a metronome. And I thought, what in the world? So I get up close to it and I'm standing there staring at it. And I think, okay, let me inspect this thing. So I get down and I look for a snake or a bug or a bird or anything. And it's perfectly whole. It's perfectly intact. There's nothing crawling around underneath it. It's just bending from the stem about 6-8 inches up and pivoting back and forth on this constant arc. Tick, 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 tick. So I said, you know, it looks to me like it's waving at me. So I said, well, hi, you know, I appreciate you welcoming me to the forest. And if you have any particular message for me or anything, let me know. And I didn't really discern anything. So I said, well, you know, I'll wave back to you and I'll leave you with a blessing. I'm going to go on the hike and I'll see you on the return trip. So I walk down the trail. And as I'm walking, I look back and it's still going on the same arc. I get down to the end of the trail and it's out of sight by now. So I get down to the end of the trail, turn around, start to make the hike back. And as I get back close enough to where I can see it, it's still going just as fast in the same arc that it was when I saw it. There's still not a single leaf blowing anywhere in the forest as far as the eye can see. So it's definitely not wind. Wind wouldn't make it do that anyways, especially not for that amount of time. And as I get back, you can still hear it ticking like a metronome where the stem is bending. And I said, okay, by now, this has been close to half an hour. This thing's been going like this, right? So I said, by now, this thing has got to be like the stem's got to be breaking or fraying or tearing or something. So I stop and I get down on my knee and I look and the stem's perfectly intact. It's not broken, not torn, not shredded. It's just tick, 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 and still going with this little bend in the stem. And I said, okay, well, I said, I appreciate you guys letting me know that you're here, that you know that I'm here. And I said, I'll leave you with a blessing. Hope you give me a blessing and I'll see you again. I walked on, and as I walked back to my bike, I periodically looked back down the trail and it was still going. So those are the types of nature spirit things and various other entities that I've experienced when I've gone out in the woods. And a lot of times I think those things are intrinsic to things in nature. And a lot of times I think that the nature spirits manipulate things to let you know that they're there. And one of the things that happened that my knees started playing out, and I had this stick that I had found in the forest. And the way that I found it, I was on one of the hiking trails, and I came around this curve, and up against this tree at about a, 45 degree angle, leaning against the tree and pointing toward the trail, was this branch. And it was about, 2 or 3 inches in diameter, and about 5.5 feet long. And I thought, oh, looks like somebody was walking with that and just got tired of it and left it by the side of the trail, propped it against the tree. And maybe they thought, well, some other hiker will come along and use it. And I thought, well, my knees are hurting. I'm going to grab it and I'm going to use it. So I grabbed it and it was good and sturdy. And I'm a professional fine artist and a photographer as well. So extremely visually oriented. So I'm inspecting this branch, and I look at it, and it's got some distinguishing features that if you put it with 10 or 12 other branches, you're going to be able to pick it out. It's that distinctive. So I'm grabbing it and I'm walking with it. And every time I go to that particular state park, I use it because it's kind of becoming like an old friend to me now, right? And when I end my hike on this trail, there's this clump of grass and weeds up under these trees. And I would go back up in there and hide this branch up under this clump of grass and weeds and things where it was out of sight, but where I knew where it was. And every time I'd go back to the state park, I'd dig it out and I'd use it to hike with. Well, about this time, I saw this advertisement for this collapsible aluminum walking stick with a compass in the handle and a padded grip and all this stuff. And it would fit in my saddlebag. And I thought, boy, this is pretty neat. I'm going to get that. So I did. And it was really great to walk with. But I missed my old buddy. So periodically, I would go and dig it out. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, sometimes I'll use it. Sometimes I'll use the aluminum walking stick. And then I found another branch sometimes used it. So I put the two branches together in the underbrush there. And they were totally completely hidden. Nobody could see that they were there. Nobody could tell that anything was there. So one day I started to go walking, and I thought, I'm going to take my aluminum walking stick. And I said, no, I'm going to go get my old buddy out. So I got the stick and walked half the trail, and I got to the exact same tree where it was before, where I had found it. And I thought, well, you know, I've got this other stick. I've got this new aluminum hiking stick. Let me leave this here where I found it, and somebody else using the trail, they'll come along, they'll use it, they'll enjoy it like I have. So I propped the stick there in the exact same place, exact same angle where I'd found it. And from then on, I either used the other branch or my aluminum hiking stick. And the next time I came around the trail, the branch was gone. I said, oh, okay, somebody found it. Somebody's using it. Somebody's enjoying it. So a few hikes later, I came back to the park again. As I hit near the end of the trail, I look up ahead, and on this other tree near the end of the trail, here sits this stick, this branch, at the exact same angle that it was when I originally found it. And I was like, nah, can't be, man. And sure enough, I go up there and it's that stick, the original stick. So I said, okay, buddy, don't know where you've been, but welcome back and glad to see you. And so I took it, used it several more times, and always stuck it back up in the underbrush there. So one day I went, and again, I thought, well, maybe I'll use my aluminum pole. And I said, no, I'm going to go get my old buddy out from the underbrush and use that. So I went to the underbrush, went there where I knew it was, dug around, and it was gone. The other branch was there that was always right beside it. And it was there, but the branch that I had favored so much that I had found, and then it disappeared, and then I found it again, it was totally, completely gone. It had vanished. And I dug all around in the underbrush, looked everywhere, and I knew exactly where I'd left it. And like I say, it was so disguised and so secure, you could tromp around in there and you wouldn't find it. So, you know, sometimes the guys on the other side will go, hey, we gave you something, now we're going to take it back.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was pretty neat. And I've had a lot of experiences out in the wild like that, in the woods like that. And on that continued ride, the thing that with the crop circle connection, a lot of signs appeared in grass on the roadside, which made a perfect crop circle. And even though it wasn't where I requested it to be in my yard, it was an absolute perfect circle. And I was like, you know what? This is the only wind I've seen this day. And it flattened the grass into this perfect circle. And I was like, okay, guys, that's, I'm getting the sign of all these things that I asked for. And then at this last park that I went to, they have all these huge stands of wild bamboo in this park. And bamboo is classified as a type of grass. And as I'm riding out of the park, they have a road around this. It's a big, deep bowl in the ground, basically. And you can hike down in there and you can hike around the top. There's also a road around the top. So I'm riding the bike and I'm leaving the forest, leaving the park. And as I go out, there's this big stand of bamboo on the side of the road. And one stalk of the bamboo starts to bend from the top in a slow arch coming over the roadway, like a big giant had grabbed it and was like just bending it over. And it bent over until it arched over the roadway. And I was riding the bike at like walking speed, and I've got real good balance on the motorcycle. I could keep it balanced. So I was watching this and I was like, my God. And it bent over the road, and I had to actually bend down a little bit on the bike to ride under it. And I stopped, got off the bike and looked. It wasn't broken, wasn't frayed, wasn't, nothing was wrong with it. Just some force had bent this long stalk of bamboo over the roadway in a perfect arch, perfect straight arch down to the other side, touching the other side. And it stayed there like that while I observed it and while I rode off. It just stayed
there. It's like greeting you or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Saying, hey, you asked for signs in the grass. Well, here they are. Because like I said, bamboo's classified as a type of grass.
Yeah.
And there were several other things that happened that day in that adventure. And like I said, those are all in the book. And so lots of neat things out in the wild.
Definitely. So, yeah, I need to actually, I'd love to get out because I live near the Rockies. I'm in Denver, and I'd love to get out in the mountains more. There's so much to see and explore in those areas. And I'm sure
there is, and great energy. Great energy that great you just energy, can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, definitely. That's part of the reason I moved out here is the energy out here is really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I know that you have some serious concerns about the UFO disclosure movement, as do I, because of, look, it's coming from our government and the media.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, who
our government, who always tells us the truth.
Right. Who shouldn't be concerned about that?
Be concerned about that.
Right. Well, before we talk about that, I know you've had a couple of personal UFO encounters, and I'd love to hear about those.
Okay, great. How much time do we have here? Because one's a little lengthy.
We got time. Go for it.
Okay, all right. So I'm, I guess, around 20, and I don't own a bike at the time. I have this big old Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser station wagon. I love that hulking beast. And I had had all these paranormal experiences, and I did not believe in UFOs. Did not believe in them. I had read the magazines, read the books, saw the interviews, heard people talk about it. And I was like, no, don't believe in it. Don't believe it. So this one day I had been at this, this place, the parking lot was across a narrow 2-lane street to this building. And I could see my car in the parking lot from the building when I exited the building. And when I went out, now this is in West Texas and we're at the tip end of Tornado Alley. And I grew up with all these violent weather things. And so as I'm going out the building, I open the door. First thing that hits me in the face is this blast of wind, this gust of wind. I said, oh boy, and I look up and the sky is overcast and darkening. And I said, okay, we're either in for a thunderstorm, maybe even a tornado watch or warning or whatever. So I look out across to my car and I think, well, I better hustle and get across the street to my car before the rain starts. And this is not an everything's bigger in Texas story. I mean, in Texas, it can rain like in half an hour, it'll flood underpasses, yards, streets in a half hour's time. Sometimes 15, 20 minutes time, it'll rain that hard. So I thought, well, I'm going to make a dash for the car. And as I look at my car down in the parking lot, touching the parking lot, connected to the clouds above, is this column of a cloud, this dark kind of black column of a cloud descending from above and touching the parking lot. And I said, oh, geez, this must be like a small twister or something or whatever. And I'm watching this thing and undulating in and out of the cloud, these orbs, colored glowing orbs, big, large size, come out to the, like right to the edge of the cloud and come out just a little bit, and then they recede back into the cloud and disappear. And they do that all the way up and down the length of the cloud, and they're like fluorescent colors. They're red and green and yellow and purple and orange and all this. And another thing I notice is that around the base of the cloud, where you would expect debris in the parking lot to be blowing, everything is perfectly still. So this is the first thing I did, Chris. I looked at this and I said, well, here I am in my 20s or late teens, about 20. And I said, here, I think I'm in good mental health and good physical condition, but obviously I've had a stroke, I've gone nuts, I'm hallucinating. This cannot be. This just cannot be. And I really seriously thought that. I thought, okay, this is it. I've lost it. And I get this bizarre urge to walk toward the cloud. So I walk toward the cloud a few steps, and it advances toward me in the parking lot. And I stop, and it stops, and I back up several steps, and it backs up, the equivalent of what I've done. And I'm like, okay, now I know I've lost it. And I walk toward it again. It advances toward me. I stop, it stops. I back up, it backs up. So I'm standing up by the door, and this guy opens the door, the friend of mine, and whacks me in the back. Oh, man, I'm sorry. So what are you doing standing so close to the door? And without even waiting for me to answer, he looks up and he goes, oh, wow, looks like we're in for a big storm, huh? And he looks across, sees this thing in the parking lot, and he goes, what in the world is that? I'm like, oh, thank God I'm not nuts, because he sees it too. And I said, wait, watch this. And I walk towards the cloud, and it comes towards me. I stop, it stops, I back up, and it backs up. I said, isn't that the weirdest thing you've ever seen? He looks at me like I'm the weirdest thing he's ever seen. He goes, bye. And he runs. He runs the other way. His car's parked in a different direction. Oh, he leaves me there alone with this thing. I'm like, thanks a lot, buddy. Now that I know it's real, what do I do now? So I wait a little bit more, and this thing goes back up into the clouds overhead, and the clouds start to move over really quickly. And I'm like, oh, okay. I run for my car, get in. I'm like, what in God's name was that? So I get out, and I have to say, I know this town like the back of my hand, still do to this day. And so I know exactly where I'm at on all the streets, and we have cars angle parked on the streets. And as I get out and start driving, it starts to rain. And when I say, Chris, it starts to rain, it gets to the point that with my wipers on high, my headlights on, I can only see a foot or two beyond the hood of my car. And the cars that are angle parked on the side of the street, I can look out my passenger side window and I can't see them at all. And I am panicking because I'm thinking I'm going to scrape these cars over here. I'm going to run into somebody in front of me. Somebody behind me is going to hit me. And sure enough, we get to the stoplight, and I've been counting the streets and I know where we're at. And you can just barely see the red glow of the stoplight through the rain. And this car in front of me stops. My headlights pick it up and I nearly ram into his bumper. And the car behind me nearly hits me because there's like zero visibility. And I think, what in God's name are we going to do? And I have never seen any rain like this anywhere. And so I'm like, okay, so the light changes. And I know that I'm pulling onto Tuig Street now, which sits behind Beauregard Street. And Sears and Roebuck sits on Beauregard Street. And they had a huge parking lot in the back on Tuig. And I said, okay, if I can somehow see the entrance to that parking lot and get in there, I'll jump out. I don't care how soaked I get. I'll run into Sears. They had a great sporting goods section in the basement. I'll go down there, look at the sporting goods till the storm passes, and then I'll drive home. So I'm poking along, trying to see this guy's bumper in front of me without hitting it and hoping the people don't hit me. And I'm still trying to look out my passenger window and see the cars that I know are angle parked over there, and I can't see. And so it's so bad now. I'm holding onto the steering wheel, and I lean over in the seat. I had a bench seat, and I lean over trying to see out the passenger windows to see if I can see the tail end of these cars that I know are there. And in 1 second's time, Chris, the rain stops. Now, I don't mean it slacks off. I don't mean it slows down. I mean, in 1 second's time, it was raining that hard. And 1 second later, count it, 1001, no rain. There's not a mist hitting the windshield. There's no rain down the street. I've got clear visibility all the way up and down, all the way side to side. And I'm like, wow, this is really bizarre. So I turn off the wipers. I'm sitting there, and the cars in the other lane and the oncoming traffic all of a sudden start swerving toward our lane and almost hitting cars in our lane. and people are honking and yelling, and people are rolling down their car windows and pointing up at the sky. And some people have parked like at bizarre angles and are jumping out of their cars and pointing up. And I'm like, what in God's name are you doing? What? And then it dawns on me. The bizarre weather thing and the reason the rain has stopped like that, they're pointing, there's an F5 tornado and it's going to come down. It's going to kill us all. And the first thought that goes through my head is, I'm too young to die, man. And I look up expecting to see this whirling tornadic doom. And over the back of the Sears building, we've gotten close enough to the parking lot of the Sears building, so you can see the back end of the Sears building. And over the back end of the Sears building, about 30 to 50 feet in diameter, is this silver metallic disc. Sitting there hovering about 30 feet above the Sears building, perfectly still, no smoke, no flames, no fire, no noise. And that's what everybody had been pointing at and jumping out of their cars and pointing at and nearly wrecking because they saw it. And I literally did a cartoon eye rub. I mean, I literally, and then look back up and it's like, oh my God, it's there. And I had to switch denominations because there it is. I have to believe it. I've seen it. All these people have seen it. So
yeah, definitely.
So
he's believing.
I start to get out of my car, and about that time I grab the door handle, and the UFO just barely perceptibly moves coming toward us. And from behind it, these clouds swiftly come up and cover it. And the split second that it covers the UFO, the rain is back in the full intensity that it was before. Doesn't start up again. It's just suddenly there in its full intensity. And I'm like, my God. So I see this guy in front of me. We're creeping again now. And this guy in front of me pulls into the Sears parking lot. I said, I'm going to follow him. I don't care if I hit him. I don't care if somebody hits me. My insurance will cover it. I don't care. I'm going to confront this guy. And so he parks. We don't even see the sign, the lines in the parking lot or whatever. We just park. We don't know where we're at. He jumps out of his car and I jump out of mine, and the rain is hitting so hard it hurts. And I'm having to shield my eyes as I run for the store, and I'm running after him. Well, he gets there first, and there was like this airlock inside where they have the big mats where you wipe your feet. To the left of that, you went down to the basement, and then straight through, you went into the main Sears store through a set of double doors. So I go in the doors. He's standing there on that mat, and he's just staring down at the mat. And I walked around in front of him. We're both soaked. And we're both dripping water. And I remember he wore glasses and he hadn't even cleaned his glasses off. His glasses are dripping water and beaded with water. And he's just staring down. I went and stood in front of him. It took him a little bit before he recognized I was there. And he looked up at me and I said, I'm sorry, excuse me, but did you see what I just saw? And he looked at me and he said, yeah, but I damn sure ain't going to tell nobody. And he sidestepped me and walked off through the store. And I knew that's all I'd get out of him.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and that was back in the day. It's not much better now. It's beginning to get a little bit better, but that was back in the day. If you talked about anything like that, you were nuts. You were made fun of. You could lose your job, all that type of thing. So people didn't acknowledge it very readily. But yeah. That was my first experience. And I had to acknowledge, okay, there they are. I don't know whose they are. I don't know what they are, but there they are. I had to change my religion.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely live in fascinating times right now. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they're allowing the Navy pilots to report it, and,
right.
And naval officers and different military personnel to have reports about UFOs. And it seems like more people are kind of opening up because of this, but I don't trust the source that it's coming from, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Now, is there any other experiences that you've had before we start talking about what you think is going on behind this?
Yeah, I've had several other experiences since then, several other sightings since then, and I write about some of those in my book as well, and some of those have been really phenomenal, and at this stage of the game, I still don't know whose they are, what they are. My suspicion is, kind of like Lou Elizondo has been trying to hint to everybody, we don't have that technology, folks, you know, and that's kind of my position, is that it does have to be extraterrestrial. I don't think they're interdimensional. I do think they are physical craft. I don't think they're our imagination or caused by us. I think they are literal physical craft that are piloted by intelligent beings. And the thing that concerns me with all of this, not just the government lying to us and the secrets that they've kept on this for all these years, but the thing that really, really bothers me about the whole UFO experience. We have, I saw Rob Shelsky the other day. He's a MUFON field investigator, and I saw him on an interview. And he raised the point that's been concerning me for a long time. We have all of these abduction reports, and those are not good experiences. We have cattle mutilations tied to UFOs. Those are not good experiences. All of these things occur against our will. They harm us, they frighten us, and there's physical pain involved and so on and so forth. Missing time episodes, a lot of things that are happening against our will. And as the investigator said, he said, you know, where is that story where I was lost in the woods at night and I was cold and hungry and freezing, and this UFO came over, shone a beam of light down and guided me safely out of the woods to safety? Where is that story? We don't have it. And we don't. There have been very few positive stories, but most of those seem to come from people that, well, I meditated and in my meditation, I met a craft or a being or whatever. Well, that's not anything you can hang your hat on, because these other things are happening physically. And so for you to come forward with a positive experience that counterbalances that, it would also have to be a physical experience.
I like to, I like to go back to Terry Lovelace's experience with these, sure, with these beings. Whenever he says that, you know, it was a physical tall being, and whenever he had him kind of locked down on a table and he looked into this being's eyes, it was like he had complete control over him. He was able to read everything about him. It was extremely advanced and superior. And right. I think cases like these made me think, man, we could just be some experiment for these beings, you know?
Right, right. That is a possibility. You know, look, we're going through all these scenarios lately. Everything becomes popular in its time. And the popular theory now is they made us, we're a game simulation, we're in some cosmic whatever, this and the other. So, okay, fine. If you accept any one of those scenarios, and at this point, look, none of us know. Bottom line, period. Right. Yeah. None of us know. But if you accept any one of those theories, okay, but there's still the spiritual component there. If the aliens made us, who made them?
Exactly. That is the huge question that I love to ask, because what is this spiritual component? And is it somehow connected to the UFO phenomenon in any way? Some think it is.
Yeah, some think it is. I don't think it is. I think that there is a God, a creator, a source, whatever out there. And I think that everything owes its existence to that, ultimately. But I don't think that, to me, now the other side is funny. It's hands-on and it's hands-off. And what I mean by that specifically is there's this wonderful little book, a little bitty tiny small book that was written decades ago, I guess. And it was called What Do We Mean When We Say God? And they have rabbis and preachers and famous people and janitors and everybody else, and they ask them this question. They give their response of what they think God is. And when I say the universe is hands on, hands off, one of the greatest things, one of the greatest explanations in there was this young kid from the Bronx, I believe it was. And he said, to me, God is some old dude with long hair and a white beard with tennis shoes on, with his feet propped up on a desk, and the computer monitor is Earth. And he's looking away from it, daydreaming or thinking about something else. And I thought, man, there you go. Because, you know, look, we pray, God help. People die. There's catastrophes. There's all these things going on. And yet in the midst of all that, we do get our guardian angel experiences. We get this, we get that, so on and so forth. So the universe kinds to seem to be this hands-on, hands-off kind of thing. And it's almost like, okay, if God created all of this stuff everywhere, then it's kind of a sit back and see what happens kind of deal, is the way we experience this. You know, it's the way it comes across to us. Right. So I don't think it's necessarily guided by that. Another popular theory now is that they're demons. Well, if there's demons, then some of them got to be angels, because if you're going to take the biblical perspective, there has to be that counterbalance. The other one is they're the watchers, and they're here to keep us safer to do it. Well, they're not doing a very good job, because we got a lot of problems on this planet right now. So it ain't working, whatever it is.
But, right. And if you look at, instances where they shut down nuclear facilities. You know, some researchers may say, well, it's for our, they did it for our own protection. Well, maybe they did it because they're protecting their investments or this planet, not necessarily us, you know.
A demonstration of power. And then in two instances, and I was not aware of this before, we've all heard of the cases where people on the bases and people in the launch centers said, yes, there was a craft that came over, it hovered there, all the missiles went offline, they were useless, they were totally without power, and then the craft left and they came back online. There were two instances that I've learned about, and this is in the mainstream thing where anybody can research it and find it, and I've seen this on, somebody talk about it on a documentary now as well, and these were people that were in the launch centers, and twice, the I'll relate the most horrific to me incident. When the craft left, the missiles all came back online one by one, and two of them were in full launch mode.
Wow.
And they had to manually take the missiles out of launch mode to keep them from launching, our nuclear missiles. Now, there's one of two things there that you can surmise. Either Zork turned to Smiggy as the craft is flying off and hit him and went, idiot, look what you almost did.
Right.
Or there's something very sinister there. Because for the missiles to come back online in launch mode and have to be manually turned off, that's pretty scary. That's pretty wild. So, you know, we get these experiences and people, like you say, people say, oh, well, it's far good or whatever. Well, that wasn't too good. You know, that was a near miss. So we have all these things. And so I'm not convinced that the Space Brothers are benign or whatever. And, you know, the lack of any type of communication, the lack of any type of compassion toward us for whatever reason. I always tell people, I say, look, we extrapolate things and extrapolation works pretty darn well. If I discover that there are good people on Earth and bad people on Earth, and sometimes just crazy people on Earth that'll do you harm, I can take that out into nature and I can extrapolate the same thing.
So yeah, and I'm sure you could do the, you know, the same thing with the spiritual world, right?
It was same thing with the spiritual world. Not everything can be all light and roses and kindness there. And by process of extrapolation, we take that out then into the aliens, whoever, whatever they may be. And you would think, well, there's got to be some of them out there that have got to be at least a little bit good. Throw us a bone. Help us out a little bit, you know. Solve the energy problem. Solve the pollution problem. Solve the cancer problem. Do something. Help us here. But there doesn't seem to be any of that interaction coming. And that concerns me. That worries me.
Yeah, that that does that. There's no, you know, more positive show of kind of help that right. they're, you know, that they're out there and that they actually care about us. That would be that would be encouraging. But we definitely live in fascinating times. John,
yeah,
that was fantastic information. Now, and before you know, before you head out, I know you're working on a third book. Could you tell us a little bit about what you're working on?
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. It's titled 20 Ways to Increase Your Psychic Abilities. And each chapter will have one specific psychic technique. And it will explain what it is. It'll define it for you, tell you exactly what it is. It'll tell you how to learn it, how to practice it, how to use it, and become proficient with it, and then the real-world application of that. And there will be a different technique in each chapter. For example, the first chapter is psychometry. It defines it, explains what it is. It tells you how to learn it step-by-step in detail where anybody can do it. And then it tells you how to practice it and get proficient at it if you put in the time. And then it tells you the real world application of that, because it doesn't do any good to learn a psychic tool or technique and have it be a party trick to impress people with. There are real world applications that you can take that psychic tool and technique, help yourself, help other people with. And so that'll occur for every technique in the book.
Great. And if people would like to find out more about your work, find out your books, give them any websites, social media, stuff like that.
Right. If they want to find out more about me or get a psychic reading with me, they can go to johnrussell.net, two S's, two L's in Russell, johnrussell.net. There's also some links on that page for my books. But if they want to find out more details about my book specifically, they can go to writingwithghosts.net. That's my first book, or anockintheattic.net. That's my second book. If they don't remember that, it's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, just about everywhere online. Walmart and Target carries them online, so people can look them up there. But they can just go to my website, johnrussell.net. You'll see the little book graphics, the covers of the books there. You can click on them. It'll take you to the site for each one, where it'll tell you more about it and has links to order it from whatever favorite bookseller you want to use.
Awesome. Well, that was such a great conversation, John. I'd love to have you back on because there's so much more we could talk about.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Just give me a holler and I'd love to do it. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening.